Welcome to The Positive Twist, a podcast about dystonia. I'm your host, Amanda Benson, and in each episode, I will be interviewing patients, caregivers, and experts who tell their story related to dystonia. Each story ending in, you guessed it, a positive twist. Thank you for tuning in. Now, let's roll the episode. Hi, with us today we have Steven.
Hi.
Hi, thank you for joining the podcast. So we're really curious to hear your story of being diagnosed with dystonia and what treatment options you have chosen to help you. Would you mind telling us a little bit about how you got diagnosed and kind of how things developed?
Yes, so I was diagnosed when I was 7, so it's about 21 years ago. I was diagnosed with generalized dystonia. It's basically started in my right foot and then gradually moved into different parts of my body. And then I was put on different types of medication. I was told to do physiotherapy, hydrotherapy, which none of them really did work. So I was from the age of 7 till roughly about 18. I was just on different medications, but there was no difference really. So from, if you look back for any time from then, there's no improvement in my dystonia. So I was using a wheelchair, but there's no difference. And then when I was 16 17, Dad started mentioning DBS surgery to us, but the only place that I was actually doing at the time was down in London. So for me, living in Newcastle was like a 4-hour train journey. So it wouldn't have really been possible because of all the adjustments you need. So luckily, a few years after that, they actually announced they were doing it in Newcastle at the RVI. So I was quite lucky. So when I was 18, I had the option of having the surgery. So I decided, because I tried all of that stuff, it was the only really option I thought, well, the last option I really had. So I had that when I was 21 or 22. So it's in 2014. And since then, it's just the improvements being huge for me.
Would you mind telling us a little bit more about the signs and symptoms that you had early on? What made you seek treatment or help when you were, you said you were 7 when you got your diagnosis?
Yeah, so I just woke up during the summer holidays and there wasn't, my right foot was kind of twisted in, and that's the first sign of it really, that there wasn't something quite right. But over the next week or so, my whole foot just twisted in, so I was literally walking on the side of my foot.
And you were so young, so do you know what your parents were thinking at the time? Have they told you what their thoughts were?
No, nobody really had an idea, or would they really know what dystonia was until I was roughly 8. It took them that long to do all the different tests. So we had no idea what it could have been. And why it had happened really is just a weird, quite a weird situation. But the more it progressed in my foot, the more it became obvious that it wasn't something that normal. And then
it wasn't just a sprain.
No. By the time the whole foot was twisted and literally walking on the side of my foot, that's when they realised it was something a lot more serious. So then I ended up going to specialist after specialist, and then I think they found out I had it through a blood test, and that's when I was actually diagnosed with dystonia.
And you said you were 8 years old at that time?
Roughly 8, because it took them a good time to actually find out what, because it's going from one specialist to another specialist to another hospital. Until I actually found out what the actual problem was with me.
Yeah. And how did this affect you in school? And just in life as a kid?
It's weird because when I was in school, I was just finishing primary school. So it didn't really affect me there. But as soon as I went into high school, I was like the only kid in a wheelchair. So it's quite daunting, really, going into a mainstream school, being the only one with any physical sign of a disability. So that was a bit daunting. But I kind of just, I keep myself to myself. So it's just kind of like, go to school, get it done, go get home, and just do that. So it was a bit of a weird situation. Something that not many people really got to understand or wanted really to get to understand what was wrong with us.
How did your peers react? Would they ask about your condition? Or it's a hard time. I can imagine it would be a hard time there in school. Yeah. It's hard even without any chronic illness. So how did you deal with that?
I mean, a few people asked us. A few people were like, just curious to know what was wrong with us. And I was just telling them. But most people didn't really ask. They just give you a weird look or kind of bit of a giggle. But it wasn't, not many people really were curious to just look at you and ask you past them all the time.
And at what point did it get so bad that you were in a wheelchair?
I ended up in a wheelchair quite quick after I got diagnosed, because the foot was that twisted in. I was literally walking on the top of my foot. So got to a point where my dad was actually giving me piggybacks, carrying me on my back, just get from one place to another. And then it was a few months after that, it just got to the point where I knew I couldn't walk. So we had to get a wheelchair. So it was not long really after being diagnosed. I was around 17, 18. But because of the dystonia spread from my foot into my back, the dystonia was so strong that it was actually pushing me out of my wheelchair. So I got to a point where I couldn't walk and I couldn't even sit in the wheelchair because it's that, the spasms are so strong, I would just couldn't sit down. So I was quite lucky that happened when I was older, because it got to the stage where the DBS was such more of an option that I wasn't panicking or I wasn't as worried.
So you first heard about the DBS treatment at what point?
I used to see a doctor, and then every year I would see a doctor, a professor, like a group of them would all come together. And I think I was 14 at the time when it first got mentioned. But at that time, it wasn't really known much about it. It was the first time they've looked into a case to have it for somebody my age. But I think my mum and dad were kind of like, well, we don't really want to make the decision for you. It should be my decision. So they wanted me to make it when I was like 18 as an adult. But first got mentioned when I was 13, 14.
And so what were your parents' concerns about the treatment? Because it seems like they opted to have you make the choice at 18 rather than making the choice for you. Do you know what their thoughts were?
I think it's just such a big decision, and it was such, which have just an impact on my life, that I think they wanted me to have like that say. I mean, they weren't against it. I think because at the time, like I said, it was just done in London. There's only one hospital doing it, and I think they wanted to see a few more people get it done, see what their reaction was, and give it a bit of time to see. Because there was a few years later, when I was about 16, 17, more people were having it done, and it went from one hospital in London to a few more. So more people were doing it. And then as soon as the star mentioned it was being in Newcastle, it was kind of more, they were more happier to do it, because like you say, it wouldn't be traveling to London if I had anything would happen, I would just go to Newcastle. So they were never against it. I think it's just a huge decision and such a big thing for somebody to go through. They wanted me to have the final say.
Right. And so during, I'm just curious to hear your story as well. These years between getting the diagnosis at 8 years old and living with the condition through really your childhood and your teens, how did it affect you? Were you able to go to school? Were you able to do after school activities? I mean, like if you're speaking to somebody in the same position, what would you like to convey to them?
Yeah, well, obviously I was able to go to mainstream school. So I still had like a being taught, like people my age are being taught. Then after school, I think it was on a Tuesday, I'd go to a after school club at a different school, which was built for or set up for people with disabilities who wanted to play sport but were all included. So I was quite lucky to go there, and that was just 2 hours just being able to play football, just mess around. And that was kind of almost like a release from school. So it's just me with people who were in the same situation and just having 2 hours running around, messing around. Because that's enough. I think that people really never understood about me, because I couldn't walk, but I could run better. So every time if I was at school and I would play, say, people playing football, and if I joined in, people would look at me thinking, well, that's who had you in a wheelchair, but you can walk and you can run. I think that's just how bizarre the Estonia is. Whereas going to this after school club, nobody really questioned you, like, or really questioned what the Estonia was. It's just you seem to be more like them. And that was really, really fun. So I had quite a few other options of going to different clubs, different sports teams. Then I joined a wheelchair basketball team after school and after college. So that was another way of kind of being able to do a bit more stuff that I was more adapted to.
Did you know any other kids or teenagers with dystonia, or...?
No, I think I've only ever met one person with dystonia since I got diagnosed. Quite a lot of our children I've known have had completely different disabilities. So I've never actually met or really got to know somebody else with it, which I think for me it's quite, I think it's harder to explain because people don't fully understand it. Whereas I think when you meet people with it, you only have to see like a brief description and be, oh yeah, I know what that feels like.
Well, I know that there's a big community within Dystonia Europe that are going to be very excited to hear your story, and I'm sure many young people that will relate. But let's move on to the actual treatment. So you heard about the DBS. Your parents wanted you to make the decision at 18. When your 18th birthday came around, was this an easy decision for you? How quickly did you opt to get the procedure done? Just tell us all about how it went down.
Yeah, well, as soon as I was like at the age of thinking, well, I really want to have it done. And then it was like, it was a no-brainer really. It's like, this is the last real option I had.
Because before that you had received, you said medications. Did you do botulinum toxin as well, or?
yeah, I was getting that. And that just, it didn't really work for me. I think that's at the age where, well, at the point where I had spread so much around my body that it just wasn't really had that effect that they wanted to. And then obviously I was having, I think I was on 4 or 5 different medications. And then they give me other side effects, so I was on more for that. And that was really, the DBS was like, well, this is the last opportunity, or the last thing I could try. really easy for us just to say yeah. And that's when I got to know Russell, who's my DBS nurse, and since then he just got everything going really.
What was it like? So you decided to have the procedure. What was it like leading up to it and then going through it and also recovery? I'm sure a lot of people who are considering getting DBS have a lot of questions about just the everything surrounding the procedure.
Yeah, for me, it was absolutely fine. Nothing fazed me. I don't know if that's just me being me. But it's quite a simple thing, really. It's just you obviously have your appointments, you get to know more about what the actual surgery involves. And they're not as daunting or they're not as scary as the you'd think. Obviously, somebody's going to go and draw two things in your brain. But it's not scary. It's just them explaining it to you. And then you have, I think you get like a few tests, which is like your blood taken and all that, which is pretty much the same for any surgery. So that didn't really bother me. And then once that's all done, it's just waiting. That's actually really excited. I was just like, oh, I wanted in. I was just desperate for the letter to come through with the date of my surgery.
And about how long did it take for you to get the surgery after you decided that you wanted to do it?
So as soon as I got to know Russell, they obviously, I think that took a year or so. And then I had my name down on the list. So I must have been on there for a year or so. And then when I was 21, I got the letter to say that they were going to start pre-surgery stuff. So that was like the tests, the make sure I was obviously able to have it. And then once that was done, I think it was 4 months after that, I had the pre-treatment stuff in November. And then the surgery in March the following year. So wasn't really that long, to be honest.
So from the decision, you made the decision at 18 and then you had the procedure, you said at 21?
Yeah, because it's in 2014 okay. When I had it. You go from children's kind of side of the hospital into adults' side. I think that was part of the process why it took longer to actually get right. The whole thing started, because you're going from one set of doctors to another, whereas I don't think it would actually take that long if you're actually doing it like now, if that makes sense.
Okay, so tell me about the procedure, the day of the procedure, like kind of what you had to go through and then the recovery.
On the day, obviously I had to be in the hospital for, I think it was 7 o'clock in the morning. And then obviously you get there, you get kind of like checked in. Then I think they just do like a few basic tests, like take your temperature, check just to make sure you're well enough to go under the anaesthetic. And then you meet the guy who puts you under the anaesthetic. And then you're just waiting for them to say, well, we're ready to take you. And then obviously you have an opportunity to ask them any questions. I think the only question I asked them was how long would it be, because I wanted to get the bus home. It's you just sat waiting really. And I think I only had to wait half an hour, so it wasn't long at all. And then the next thing you know, they're putting you to sleep, and then you're waking up 6, 7 how many hours later it is.
And how was that for you? Did your recovery go smoothly? And what did it look like? Did you have any pain or?
Waking up, I didn't really notice anything at the time. When I got put back onto like the wards, that's when you start realizing there's a wire in your neck. And it feels a little bit weird. Like I say, you've been put asleep with nothing in your chest and in your brain, to then waking up and you've got some weird device that is unusual, but you don't really feel any pain. You don't. I think the only thing that you feel is just this stitching and the staples in your head. That's the only thing you know, and that's just more of an irritation, really.
How long did that take to heal?
I think I had them all taken out two weeks after, which wasn't too bad. And then after that, they were all healed. And even like, I thought I'd go and have to shave all my hair off or something, but it's just two tiny, tiny bits to take out. So you couldn't even notice them. Even if I had two big plasters over my head, but even then, you still don't notice any of that. So it's the whole procedure after, it's actually quite well hidden, which was another thing that I didn't really realise until I woke up.
I know that there's a time of kind of finding the right level and stuff with working with the device, right?
Yeah.
So what did that look like for you? Do you want to tell us a little bit about, you know, where did you find your sweet spot? How long did that take?
That's probably the most complicated part of it, actually, finding out which is your right settings or your right, you see, the right spot for you. Because I was actually really, really sensitive to small changes. That was a bit tricky at the start, because there's been times when I'd go in and see Russell, you make just the tiniest of adjustments, and then I'd be back. You'd always make an adjustment, and then I'd wait an hour rather than going home and then something going wrong. And there was one time where the slightest of adjustments had made my whole body twisting, and that was a really, really weird like feeling. But obviously, they're the things that have got to be done to know whether what's too high or what's too low. But once we had done that, and obviously part of the recovery was just getting out walking and finding out that that is your level. And if I really go anything above 2 volts, which is on each side, so that's probably the most toughest part, really. It's just finding the right
tuning.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I think that's one thing that I'd said before the surgery was they made such a big point that it doesn't, as soon as we turn it on, it's not going to make an instant improvement.
So how long time did it take to find that right setting for you?
Probably 6 to 8 months. It was a while, but I think it is such a... Because obviously I didn't realise how much stuff they can actually do, because it's not just changing the rate of the pulse, you can change the pulse width, I think it is. You can change the position that it points to. So there's more stuff they can actually do, which I didn't realise. So although they might get one part right, there's another part that can make a difference.
Interesting.
And that's the part where it's kind of maybe more sensitive or more able to tweak better. So they've got to find those parts as well.
And so, of course, everybody wants to know how this changed your life. What did it feel like once you found those right settings, or when you got the first rewards after having the procedure done?
It was really weird. Like, cause I was 22 or 23 at the time after the surgery. And for me, I was like getting on the metro for the first time to go into town. And for me, that was like huge. Like walking to the metro station, getting on the metro. Whereas most kids my age would be like going on holiday, getting on aeroplanes. But for me, it's just like huge, kind of like this time last year, I would never been able to do that. So just being able to go out the house, walking.
Liberation.
Yeah. Going to the paper shop, that's something that I could never do before. So for me, it's just like, it was the smallest of things, which like, this is so cool to be able to do now.
That's great. And I mean, I have to add it in there. Have you ever had any complications or side effects that were negative during these years now? So you said you got it in 2014 and it's now 2020. So you've lived with DBS for 6 years, about 6 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Have there been any negative side effects?
No, there's not, like, nothing major. I mean, there's been times when during the adjustments, things haven't kind of gone quite right. But I think that's more part of the trial and error, finding the right settings. But nothing's gone wrong. I think my reaction to it, like my body adapting to it, it's been pretty much perfect. And then in 2 years ago, I had the battery changed to a rechargeable battery. And even with that one, nothing's gone wrong. So I've been quite, well, very lucky, really.
Right, so the battery needs to be changed every now and then, and you've gone through one change so far?
Yeah.
Okay, and so you're due for another one in a few years, or how long do they usually last?
Well, the first one I put in is just like the standard one, and I think that lasts for up to 6 years. But I mean, it all depends on your settings or how much, like the higher the settings, the less it lasts. Mine lasted from 2014 to 18, and then my new one, because it's rechargeable, it lasts, I think, for 10 years. So the next one I should be due will probably be in, 6 to 7 years, really. And I think that's the idea of, is if you can adapt to it well, then the next part is putting a rechargeable one in, because it lasts longer and they're actually a lot smaller as well.
Oh, right. So just going back to your life changing and what the surgery has meant to you, you know, what would you say to somebody who is considering DBS at this point, and maybe especially somebody your age or young adult or teenager?
I think obviously it does sound daunting, especially like deep brain stimulation. It sounds like, oh, it is a bit scary, but it's not. And what they can do and how simple really it is, it does make such a big difference. And obviously medication, it can help, but it's not going to get rid of most of it. Like, I mean, I know that you can never be cured from dystonia, but I think this is the closest thing to it.
Do you feel kind of like you've been cured with the DBS?
Yeah, it's like, I mean, like the stuff that I could do now, which I couldn't do before, is like crazy. Like, if I was to write a list, I kind of wish I wrote a list, like when I was 10, of like all the stuff I couldn't do. And then now, like how many I could tick off, you probably could see like the majority of them I can do now.
Do you wish that you would have had the procedure done sooner?
I have thought about that before, but I don't think I would have, because I think because it wasn't actually logistically possible. They say it would have had to have been going down to London. And after the surgery, the amount of times I had to go in and see Russell, I think the stress of it, the anxiety.
How often do you have to go in?
So now it's not that often. I'd say it's weird. It can go from not going in for a couple of months to having to go and see him 3 times a week. It just depends, really. But if I do have to go and see him in so many times in a short space of time, it's more just because it's tiny, tiny little things. And I don't know if it's just me thinking, oh, well, it's not quite right, or if it's more of a just tiny tweaking, so it's nothing major. It's just, oh, well, it's a bit too tight, or if he's tried something new and it's not quite had the impact, it's just been like pop right back, kind of like re-put back to where it was. And even sometimes that can make a big difference, is changing it, giving it a few days, going back, and it's like fine again.
So it sounds like you were really fortunate too, living in more of a metropolitan area, because you did mention that when you were a child, it was only offered in London. Am I right?
Yeah.
And then, but then it became available where you live. That's still quite a metropolitan area though. So just dealing with the maintenance, living close to where you're getting your care, I'm sure that helps out a lot.
Yeah, definitely. Like, obviously, the RVI is huge for the brain stuff.
Right.
So I do think I've been lucky in that aspect as well, that if anything does go wrong, I can literally just say, oh, hi, ring Ross, or hi, can I pop in and see you? And I can, most of the time, it's just go in, say adjustment, and then back home within a few hours later on. So I do think that's, I've been lucky being so close. Obviously, some people mightn't be as close to close as that, so it might be a bit more tricky for them. I do think myself lucky in that area.
Right. And you mentioned before that just a big win for you was to get on the metro, but that others your age would probably, you know, be more excited about traveling and stuff. It did make me think, because I know that a few people are worried about traveling with the device. Have you done any international travel since you got the DBS? And
yeah, I haven't flown, and that's just because where I've gone on holiday, it's been more by ferry. But when you, after the surgery, you get kind of like a box from, I think it's Medtronics who make the devices, and they give you a medical card. So it's just like, this person's got a metal implant. So if you have any issues, you can just show them that. So I've never had any problems at all. And because I've got like a little device, so I can adjust it as well. So if I was like abroad and I did have any slight problems, I know myself, I can just quickly change a few settings. But I've never had any issues going abroad. I think I had mentioned it to Russell once, and he actually says, oh, because you can actually, there's a card or something in the box, which you can go to the nearest hospital, wherever you are, and just say, oh, this isn't working, can I replace it? And they can replace it, which I never knew about until a couple of years ago. And so I think because it is a European company, I think people abroad know a bit more about it than people in England. So going abroad, it's never really put me off.
That's great. Well, I think we're nearing the end of this interview. I don't know if you have anything else that you would like to add.
I mean, obviously, during my recovery, I had like a year when I wasn't doing like anything. So rather than getting bored, I took up photography. So I'd got myself a camera, self-taught myself. And then that meant I'd be going outside, I'd be walking, kind of just like exploring different areas. And then since then, I've actually turned my photography into my job. So the DBS has kind of gone from helping us walk, changing everything I couldn't do, to actually using my recovery and progressed from it being a hobby into my job. So that's definitely like the biggest impact it's had.
That's really cool. So originally it was something that you used to cope, you got a hobby, and now it's what you do for work.
Yeah, and that's, I wouldn't have done that if it hadn't been for the recovery, like doing nothing in my recovery. I thought I need something to do, and that helped. Like you see, it didn't just help get myself a job, it helped walking, getting used to walking, because it is such a, from literally, your muscles aren't being used in your legs, So just that sort of getting my legs more used to the routine of walking, that helped, and everything just kind of progressed from there.
That's great. And so what does your life look like today with work and life and maintaining or going in for your fine-tuning and such?
Yeah, I'm like loving life, really, to be fair. I'm quite a laid-back person, so for me to be able to go out, do my job, which is more like a hobby, being able to walk, and knowing if I do ever have any slight issues, I know that I can just go ring Russell, and he kind of understands what I do in that, so he's very adaptable to me, which I think's, again, really lucky. So it's not like, oh, you have to have an appointment. It's like, yeah, easy. So I'll ring him. He says, yeah, come in like whatever time he's free. So it's, everything's just weirdly fell into the perfect routine for me. And it is just perfect, really.
It sounds like one of those typical stories where they kind of describe it like everything happens for a reason. Do you kind of feel like that's kind of your story? It sounds like you wouldn't change anything as a child when I asked you about if you wish that you had the procedure done sooner, but it really seems like you were at the right place at the right time, and things have fallen into place for you.
Yeah, definitely. Somebody had asked me like a few years ago, saying, oh, did you wish you never had dystonia? And to me, I'm thinking, well, no, because it's like made me appreciate stuff more, like not being able to do stuff then. Like now we kind of think, oh, it just adapts you better to life. And it sounds weird, but you can get used to different things that most people may not be used to. So like it's obviously it helps you like socialise more, confidence. So things like just the little things in life you kind of appreciate more. So it's definitely been like, looking back now I wouldn't change any of it.
That is very inspiring. Well, thank you so much for telling us your story, and thank you for participating in the podcast.
No problem.
Actually, if you want to just make a plug, if you want to lead people to a website or anything like that, do you want to just let the listeners know where they can find you and your work?
It's just Stephen Beatty Photography. I've actually got a website. Yeah, I am building it now. But no, just our Facebook, Stephen Beatty Photography, where I do all my work.
We'll make sure to leave all of the links in the description. So if people want to find you, they'll be able to get there.
Yeah, perfect.
Okay, well, thank you.
No problem. Thank you.
This episode was made possible by our supporting partners, Medtronic and Ipsen, as well as our production company, The Rise Factory. Thank you again for listening. And don't forget to subscribe. We release a new episode on the fourth Wednesday of every month, and we hope to have you join us again next time. And hey, until then, take care, and don't forget to live life with a positive twist.